The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the last 9 till noon show of the week. It is, of course, Friday, the 10th of January, 2025, just after 4 minutes past nine. And coming up on the show, we'll introduce our Friday panel very shortly. Seamus Gunn joins us for the first time in 2025, answering your legal questions. So get them into us if you have a question that can be answered by Seamus. And a little later on, of course, we have That's Entertainment, Michael and Fionnuala back together for that. We want you involved in the conversation throughout. Your views incredibly important, as you know. You can WhatsApp and text 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. If you want to call the show, it's 07491 25000, and emails arrive, comments at highlandradio.com. If you want to watch the show, you can, of course, if you're at home on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland, on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, or you can carry us around with that app and on Facebook and on the X platform. Right, let's say good morning to former independent deputy Thomas Pringle. Thomas, good morning to you. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. How's it going? You're well.
It's great to have you on the show. Dust has settled post-election. What's your feelings? How are you feeling?
Yeah, dust has settled. There's a quick run into Christmas afterwards, so that kind of give you a bit of a break in that there as well too. So now, and beginning of January now, just getting used to it, and we'll have to start looking for work in the coming days anyway. So that's the next step along the way, to find something to keep me busy.
Is there an area that you would be particularly interested in, I suppose, given, I mean, you've got a wealth of experience from a political point of view, but maybe you have the luxury to choose an area that you think you could sort of continue to have a positive impact in? Not that everyone does in their work, don't get me wrong, but I hope you understand the question.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I hadn't really thought about it, because, I mean, it's the nature of the elections that you can't think about what if you lose.
Yeah, of course, yeah. There,
and until it happens. But look, I would like to stay involved in some form, and maybe in voluntary groups or something like that there, or something and connected to the political field. Yeah. I think that would be, unfortunately, that's probably the only experience I have at the moment. The last 15 years has been a TD. That's experience around that I have. So some sort of role in that, yeah. I would see myself as maybe. Depends what's available to you.
Yeah, but you say it's all the experience you have. It's really significant experience. Paddy Rooney, PRO of the Friends of Letterkenny County University Hospital. You've made your career choices now. You're busy, but you'd like your time too, don't you? I don't think you're looking for anything actively, are you, Paddy?
Well, I suppose Thomas had a choice. I had none. The clock stopped in my career when I came to 65 or 60. I had no choice. So, yeah, it's all voluntary work for me, unpaid. There's plenty of that going. There's plenty of unpaid work going, Thomas, unfortunately. Not as much as paid work.
All right.
Unfortunately, I can't afford to take that.
All right. Eamon McGuinness is joining us. I'm not sure if he has joined us. She's renowned for her technical issues. Never her fault. Always the broadband. Are you there, Eamon? No. Okay. Well, Eamon will join us at some point. I'll stick with you guys if that's okay. Just hearing on the news there about Elon Musk, what's your view on the influence of the ex-owner and Trump's right-hand man, Elon Musk? He's having a significant impact, it would seem, in terms of influencing global politics. He's endorsed the AfD in Germany and is actively trying to remove Labour from power in Britain. His intentions have now turned to Ireland, describing unverified claims, in fairness, that illegal immigrants get shorter sentence here as messed up. He's called on the IRA, or he's called the IRA, a plush toy, in response to a post about Irish immigration from a far-right account. Is his influence such now that he simply can't be ignored? I'll start with you, Thomas Pringle. I'd say your politics and Elon's are far apart, but, you know, it's clear he has a significant influence. So is that a good thing, a different voice in the political sphere? Is it dangerous? I don't know. What's your view?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, he's using the platform that he has as his own personal vehicle to pursue his own personal agenda. And it is Like, from my point of view, it'd be totally the opposite, thank God, of any of the political views I would have. And I think it's worrying, you know, that somebody can use that office, and especially in a way that it's not putting himself forward for election, or that they're, and it's supporting who he sees as alternative, or what he sees as a view. And there is a risk that he can use that support to actually influence elections, and that would be difficult. I don't know how you actually prevent that or work against and prevent that from happening either as well, Greg. So it's very hard to gauge. But I mean, we have seen over the years, very powerful political people support candidates in different elections. We've seen it in England, where Rupert Murdoch and stuff like that there, and his newspapers were supporting different political parties over the years as well too. So it's not unusual, I suppose. Probably what's unusual about this is the amount of reach that he has. And basically, if anybody has a mobile phone with Twitter or X on it, they're getting bombarded with this information, and that's probably the slight difference. But I don't know really what you do in relation to counteracting that.
Maybe it's just part of modern society. He would see his voice as the alternative voice to the mainstream media that is pushing, you know, maybe your middle ground independents, your Fianna Fáils, your Fine Gaels, your Labours, your Tories, or whatever it might be. And he is the alternative voice that's been missing for so long because of the legacy media.
Well, it's not an alternative factual voice anyway. And basically, if we all had that platform, that we could rant and say whatever we wanted on, it would be ideal for everybody. And that's the real danger with it, is that how realistic or what he's saying is, or whether it's the truth or not, that's the big issue with it. And he's just using it to his own personal ends. Hopefully, the wish is, and you'd hope, that the electorate, wherever and whatever country they are, would see beyond that as well too. But I think the influence is there. I think it's probably something that political parties will have to live with. But I mean, and the issue is whether political parties will lean into it or try and go against it. Hopefully, if they have the courage, they'll stand up and say what they're saying is wrong, rather than trying to flummox it and lessen the impact.
It's an interesting observation you made there, because and the lady's name escapes me at the moment. Maybe one, if you can help me out, but the Labour representative who is in charge of whether or not inquiries have progressed in relation to the child rape gangs that were ongoing in Britain. Yeah. And he called her a witch and was very derogatory towards her. 2 years ago, I'd say 2 years ago, the political class in Britain would have united to say you cannot speak about someone like that. But many in the Tory government who were in power whilst these rape gangs were doing what they were doing actually backed him in his language of her. So you pose the question, they either oppose it or lean into it. I think we're already seeing in large numbers the leaning into it.
Yeah, and we've seen that in Ireland in the last couple of years as well too, in terms of the far right and what they're saying in Ireland, that people have political parties have all leaned into it not challenged it, what has been said, and that's the danger, and that's where you leads to the greater influence that people like him have, and that there is that people start to take on and support his views rather than actually questioning them and challenging them.
Yep, that's Thomas Pringle's view, and I'm sure there's many of you listening out there that disagree with Thomas and would agree with Elon Musk, and that's fine. We're not here to try and convince you otherwise. It's just people's differences of opinions. So, you know, if you have €45 billion in your pocket, Paddy, you can buy a global social media platform and become as influential as any elected public representative, and that seems to be what Elon Musk has done.
You absolutely can, and I've seen I read somewhere during the week that Keir Starmer, the British Prime Minister, has actually issued a directive to all of the Labour MPs in the party in the House of Commons to stay off social media or not to make any public comment about Elon Musk and about what he's doing at the moment, and particularly, I suppose, about his close friend Donald Trump, about he's saying about Canada, Greenland and the Panama Canal and so on. So they're actually leaning into it. They're not challenging them, because there seems to be a big fear on everybody's part here is that they don't want to upset Elon Musk, because he can turn on you in a very vicious way. And by association, then, if you're not Elon Musk's friend, you're not Donald Trump's friend either. And because he's so unpredictable, people are not sure what he's going to do. For so long as media has become a thing, we've had very big players in the media industry. And I'm talking about people like Randolph Hearst in America, Thomas referenced Robert Maxwell, and you had Rupert Murdoch and people like that. And they were very powerful people, and they owned a lot of different newspapers, either broadsheets or tabloids. But you had to buy the paper to see it. And if you didn't buy it, you know, you didn't hear it and so on and so forth, the way they were pushing it. Now, of course, this is, as Thomas made reference to, the reach that they have now through social media. All you have to do is have a mobile phone. It doesn't matter whether you live in Alaska or South Africa or Pakistan or wherever. You can see this. And I suppose the disappointing thing about all this is fact and truth now don't really matter. It's just... If powerful people say something often enough, then suddenly it becomes the truth and it becomes fact.
But just to that point, Paddy, if you don't mind, like, there is no doubt Rupert Murdoch and the Sun newspaper and other newspapers did swing elections the way they wanted. They had secret meetings in buildings on Fleet Street and said, right, well, we'll back you probably for this, that and then. And whilst newspapers don't have the reach they had now, everyone had a paper in their house at one point or another in Britain. So this people pushing back against Elon Musk, is it just because they don't like their politics? It was okay. It's okay for George Soros to do it with his billions, and it's okay for, you know, Fleet Street, as it used to be, to do, because they kind of might align with what the majority think. But as soon as an alternative voice like Elon Musk comes out, all of a sudden we need to do something about it.
Except that all of these very rich and powerful people, the likes of Elon Musk, would say, for instance, they're pushing a very specific agenda, and it is pro-market, pro-business, low intervention, minimal government intervention, anti-Islam, all of that. You can put all of that stuff into the round, and whether it's Donald Trump or Elon Musk or people of that like mind, there seems to be a commonality about the things that they're talking about. And all that is fine. But of course, it's not fine, because there is huge consequences, we'd say, for instance, for workers right across the globe in terms in relation to, if you have a push a market agenda and you push the minimalised regulation and minimal government intervention, that means that protections that workers have all over the world, that they could disappear in a whim. I mean, if you're looking at stuff in the media at the moment about Shein and Temu, those two companies that are they sell very cheap tat or whatever, but it's companies that originate in China. But there's issues about forced labour and slavery and all that producing those goods. I mean, who's going to stand up for them? People, they aren't being looked after at the moment. And people think in Ireland, well, we've got all these rights here and that's so far away, we don't need to know about that. But what happens when this comes to our door if, as Thomas said, that all the political parties and institutions start to lean in this, and they don't confront it because they're afraid of upsetting these people?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Eamon McGuinness, thanks so much for sticking with us. Slightly disadvantaged, I think, because of the technical issues, but we're talking about the influence Elon Musk has on politics now, and it's ever-growing and it's global. Do you welcome an alternative voice? Do you welcome his platform that platforms alternative voices, or do you have any concerns?
Look, I was just listening. Well, I was trying to listen to what two gentlemen were saying, and I have to agree with them. Social media, you know, Elon Musk, you know, it's all crazy. Political, there's people. I seem to be gone there again, am I?
Oh, that's okay. We're just going to focus on the audio, Eimear.
Yeah, okay. Look, if politics should be left to the politicians, and that's, you know, the only people that should be involved. If you're elected to represent and, you know, do your job as a politician, that's where it should remain. The whole world has gone crazy, if you ask me.
It does feel like that sometimes. It really, really does. And it's getting harder and harder to find the truth. And I just think that over time... Yeah. Will the truth become less important? I'm not laying this at the door of the floor or whatever of Elon Musk. It's just, it does feel like it's gone crazy. You could say anything, do anything, create any image, create any video.
That's correct. You know, yeah, and there's no, there doesn't seem to be, there's no follow-up on anything then, you know, so media has a light up on. I don't know. As I've said time before, it's great one way, it's not so good in another.
All right, Timur, stay where you are. Morning panel, Musk is a mix of the bad guys from the Bond movies, too much influence, which will only get worse when Trump takes power again. That's whilst their relationship is as it is, because they are two types of characters. You can see them falling out quite quickly. And although the Irish government have been pushing an anti-Irish sentiment for the last few years and no one's saying anything about it. Okay, we're going to have more from our guests after this break. And it's Friday's 9 till noon show. We have our Friday panel with us. Taoiseach Simon Harris has said government formation talks are in the landing zone. Mr. Harris said it may be tight to have a coalition in place before the Dáil resumes on January 22nd. However, he believes it can be done. The regional independent group, fronted by former Fine Gael Minister Michael Lowry, are the favourites to support the formation of government, having already secured the position of Cam Corla for Verona Murphy. The Healy-Ray brothers, Michael and Danny, may also feature. But at what cost? Are you in favour of this kind of behind-closed-door dealings? What's your view, Paddy Rooney?
Well, Greg, we're going to have to see the roll of the dice here. I mean, it's unlikely that... Right, so the discussions that are taking place at the moment are confidential, but when there is an agreement about who supports the government and who doesn't, well, that will become public, because it's highly unlikely that if any TD... or TDs, plural, if they achieve some form of goodies from the government, that they're actually going to keep it quiet, because they're going to have to advertise it in their own constituency. I mean, Simon Maloney had an article in The Independent there a while ago just about this particular issue, and he made reference in particular to the two Healy-Ray brothers in Kerry. This wasn't... He was given as a sort of an example and about what they could get and what they're likely to get. And he made mention of the fact that Thomas is going to have to help me out here now here, because I can't remember the last version of the National Development Plan. It was about 4 years ago.
Yeah,
so there would have been a lot of stuff in that around, would say, for instance, if we're talking about Kerry now, we're talking about things like the upgrade of the fishing pier in Dingle, the some work to be done on the commercial pier in Tarbert, the road from Killarney to Cork and Limerick to Cork to go through Kerry, and all of this kind of stuff. But all of that stuff has been already agreed, and this would be rebadged together. But the big thing for the two Healy-Ray brothers, I suppose, is, and Thomas, actually, you spoke on Greg's programme before, a couple of months before the election, about your experience in dealing with government ministers and dealing with departments and so on and so forth, about delays and shabbiness in responses or whatever. One of the things that TDs that support the government, I suspect, Senator Maloney says, are going to demand is some form of a back channel access to government ministers and to senior officials within a department that they have an issue about, either concerning an individual or a community or a group of people, but they want rapid access and a rapid response to that. And I suppose the other thing that they're going to want as well is that when a government are going to make an announcement about something specific, either specific to Kerry or it relates to Kerry, is that the Healy-Rays are going to hear about it first. And they're going to announce it for.
But that's problematic.
That's all
when,
fine. There's no harm in any of that.
Well, it is. There is a lot of harm in it if you're a Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael TD.
There is, yeah, absolutely. But you have to contrast all of this stuff, right, with the first time that this ever hit the headlines back in 1981 when Tony Gregory got into a relationship with Charlie Hoy. And Tony Gregory was a new TD at the time, and he was representing Dublin Central, which was the most socially deprived constituency in the whole country, and I believe it still is. And he was looking for very specific, very measurable issues around blocks of flats to be knocked down and to be replaced by proper housing, and for things like amenities for parks for adults and community centres for people for recreation, playgrounds for children and so on and so forth. And specifically around that time, because the proliferation of the heroin epidemic in Dublin became a big thing, he wanted to guard the response to the distribution of heroin, and he also wanted treatment facilities for people who are already addicted. So they were very specific, they were very measurable, and they were very deliverable. And I suspect that the stuff that's going to come, if anything arrives here, it'll be more grey.
You're correct, right, and that's all fine. But the elephant in the room for me is we don't have... we don't have a TD that's a part of these negotiations. We don't have the goodies coming to us or whatever. We're not getting the advantage. And the wider question is, and whilst you say a lot of this will be public, a lot of it won't be public as well, is it the right way to do politics whereby, you know, a small group of people can benefit their specific areas because they can and vote even against their conscience to keep two big parties in power? Like, that's fine if you're in Kerry, but we're not in Kerry, we're in Donegal. And is this really an acceptable way to do politics, even though it's accepted that is the way that politics is done?
Hey, Greg, well, we do actually have that TD, and his name is Charles Ward. Right, he's an independent.
But he's not
TD.
Negotiating.
And,
yes, but
and
he's
I'm actually
not
very on that point now because I was going to say it anyway. I'm actually very, very disappointed to see that his name is never actually mentioned. That all of the other 24, 25 TDs in the country, however many there are, or whatever, that they're leaving him out there because he's got a very specific issue.
He does, but he's not. But he's with a different grouping that aren't negotiating with government.
I know that.
So that's why his name is going to be absent.
But that's the way democracy is, Greg, and that's the way that they.
I don't think that's the way people have voted. To be honest with you, I don't think people
voted.
Well,
you know, I don't think that. Gael are only one seat short of getting them elected to government, and they're going to get five or six comfortably. TDs to support them, and that's just the way that it is. I mean, what is the alternative?
Well, discuss it and see if people are opposed to it and seek reform. I don't know. What's the point of any of it? We might as well just jack it all in. Eamonn McGuinness is with us. Switch to the phone line, Eamonn. My apologies. You bear with us. The question was being posed there. You know, we have the independents now negotiating with government, presumably with some benefits to their areas or even to them personally. Who is to say? Yeah. Are you in favour of this? Is this part of democracy? Is if we had an independent who was about to sort of secure a level four status for Letterkenny University Hospital, we'd be happy with it then. We'd be doing cartwheels.
We would, but we don't, unfortunately. Just as Paddy was saying on Charles Ward will probably take a while to get settled in and to gain his political legs, I suppose, so we'll give him time. But on the issues that we're discussing, do I think it's, on especially Michael Lowry issue, you know, I find that atrocious, actually. But then there's some also very good politicians, you know, involved in this regional independent group. You know, I can understand. You're a politician. I look at Michael Fitzmaurice there as an example, and I talk to him quite a bit. He has been fighting. Thomas would probably tell you the same. You fight on certain issues and loads of different issues, and you're constantly trying to gain ground. So, you know, it's very difficult when you're kind of left out of things. So to be maybe involved in this alliance or to get into government and maybe have a little bit more. Of course you're going to push for that. We did know that was going to happen. Do I agree with the way it's done? Absolutely not. But should that say it, that's we knew we were heading that direction, you know.
Yeah, and like we still don't really know at what cost support for a vote of no confidence comes at. You know, we know there was a couple of those votes during the last term of the Dáil, and meetings were had and agreements were reached. We don't really know what happened there.
Yeah,
like, is that the way it should be? Should these agreements be fully published, costed?
That'll all, I suppose, cost money and sure everything. Look, Greg, the reality is everything is done, signed, sealed, delivered and dusted before we're told about it in every step of the way. What I do find laughable is the discussions or what we've listened to from Micheál Martin and Simon Harris the last few days on what they have to say about Michael Lowry. You know, they're almost afraid to say what they really, well, they're not saying what they really think, and probably just to get this deal done and over the line. So, and that kind of worries me in a way also when you look at they were also supposed to be talking to Independent Ireland Group. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to actually see how it plays out. But,
all right, let's get
you know, in both groups, I think there's some very good politicians in that. Mm-hmm. But I suppose there's good politicians all over the country. So
yeah. Thomas Pringle, what's your view on it all?
Yeah, I find it interesting, Greg, you know, that all the focus is on now the independents and the deals that they'll be doing. You know, but the reality is that there's 15 people that'll have a far bigger say in what goes and where in the constituencies. And we've seen it in Donegal in the recent past as well, too, where having a minister or a junior minister in the constituency is more important. But there's never any focus on them. And all the discussion is on Charles Ward and what he's going to deliver. But Charlie McConnellogue has been minister for the last 5 years. Joe McHugh was Minister before that. And, you know, and what have they delivered and what are they delivering for the county? And that's what people should be focusing on, I believe. You know, because that's where the decision making, they're supposedly at the heart of decision making. And we've seen how that has delivered. In relation to the independents that are going to support the government, that is the nature of independence, and they'll do a deal for their constituency. Yes, I do believe that the deal should be publicised, and be very interesting to have a look and see, as a lot of the stuff will actually be stuff that is going to be delivered anyway. That's what Paddy was saying, that it might be delivered a year faster than normal or a couple of years ahead of schedule or that, but it's stuff that is already on the pipeline.
Like what could potentially have been the relief road in Letterkenny or the bridge or whatever that's on the table, but it's brought forward. So with all that in mind, Thomas, if you get a group of independents, 7 or 8 or 9 independents, and they come together under one umbrella and then agree to support a government come what may, in your view, and it's not a loaded question, does that make a mockery of independence, or does it show the power an independent can have?
I suppose in the Irish context, independence is a very unusual thing, in the overall context, and in the Irish context is very extreme, and there is the variations. We've seen that over the last number of years, I suppose since the crash, really. There's variations in the type of independence, and independents are flexible in terms of that they can group together to form as they have a working relationship or stuff like that there as well. So at what point do they stop being independent, become a political party? I don't know. And the nature of independent, they can be independent with more fluidity, a choice to actually support issues as not, and not follow the real party discipline.
And of course, we can see the DNA in a lot of independents as well.
Yeah. I suppose that's probably true as well. Independents come from all sides of the house and stand as independents and get elected and stuff like that. There, you know, and people who vote for independents voted for other parties previously and stuff like that there as well too. So that is the nature of it. And the Irish system allows for independents to take place in it all, where a lot of political systems don't allow that to happen. And in quite a number of countries in Europe, you can't get elected unless you're a member of a political party, and that as well too. You know, so that's the nature of the system.
So it's not perfect, but it's better than.
I think it's better than an awful lot of systems that we have, and especially our electoral system. The PRSTV is the most democratic, I would say, of any electoral system that is going, and this is the outcome from it. I think that any deals that are made should be published, and I think, as Paddy says, it'll be in the interest of the particular politician to make sure that it's published, to make sure that it's known that he's been involved in it. But then as well, there is politicians that have been very good at actually claiming everything, and everything that happens in the county becomes down to them as well too, and that myth goes out there.
We saw a number of embargoes broken in the run-up to the general election.
Yeah, do you mind if I make a point there, just while Thomas was talking there, and you talked about the price of Previa, you know, supporting votes of confidence and so on and so forth. If my memory serves me right, former TD in Sligo, Mark McSharry, was on your programme, Greg, and he gave a commitment. There was a vote of no confidence, I can't remember, against whichever government minister it was, but he gave an undertaking anyway that he was going to do it. And he said about what he got for it. And if you remember that he got an undertaking, whatever that meant, from the Minister of Health, that they were going to increase the bed capacity in Sligo University Hospital, and also they were going to develop the cardiology services. Hey presto, I read in the paper yesterday that Marion Harkin, one of the red lines that she has, is increasing the bed capacity in Sligo and doing something with the cardiology services. I heard that one before.
Yeah, indeed. I think the 26 beds actually were opened this week. In that hospital as well. Eimear, last comment from you before the break, if you've anything to add.
I don't really. I think the men have it well covered there.
All right, okay. Stay with me because I'm going to be starting with you next. It is the 9 till noon show. We have Thomas Pringle, Paddy Rooney, Eimear McGuinness, and we're going to be talking the weather next. Caller says, Greg, yes, we had influence in government in the past. The Blaneys had it for years. Indeed, that's a point made by John McAteer yesterday. It's not the way the country should be run to look after our own area or your own area and strike a deal with the powers to be. Why would you go and vote again if your government is not united, not united in the country? Do we have... We have suffered enough for years with the likes of the Healy Rays back in government to get self gains. Look after the whole country. Don't come out looking like a gangster. But that's all well and good. And people would say, oh, you don't want parish pump politics. But then look at how people vote. It seems to be that's the way the public often vote. Why are you ridiculing Elon Musk about his politics when we in Ireland have no democracy? We have ruling parties for over 100 years. Fianna Fáil won't speak to the second biggest party, Sinn Féin. But they don't have to. That's the way the system works. And the public voted these parties in for the last 100 years. They weren't sort of installed. That's you, the electorate's idea. And we're not ridiculing Elon Musk. We're discussing Elon Musk. I'm sure he's a big boy. He can take a bit of heat. So we had a week of weather warnings, and it became a bit of a political football, like everything nowadays. And almost you could see the difference between left and right as to whether you thought warnings are a good or a bad thing. It's hard to make sense of what the public mood is, though. Some saying the warnings are catastrophizing the weather, while others upset Donegal was the forgotten county again and didn't get an orange weather warning. I can't make any sense of it all. Emer McGuinness, manager of the Donegal Mark, can you? Did Metairn get it right this week, do you think?
I think they did. Okay, they left Donegal out, but I wasn't going to get upset over that. Look, you know, to say that we shouldn't get weather warnings or to complain about getting them, I think they're a must. Of course, they're important. You know, it protects people at the end of the day. It prepares you, and it's advice at the end of the day. You can do what you want after that. As regards for, like, the farmers, and that's the industry I'm in, we're very grateful to know what weather's coming, whether you have to tie things down, whether it's wind and rain, or if the pipes are going to freeze and you have no water for your cattle. So, yeah, you do need them, and they are important. Weather to the point where it disrupts schools, and I think that's what people would be complaining about, you know, maybe sometimes when they're told there's going to be wind and the schools are closed, and then they don't end up being as bad as we think. But I'm very glad to have them, and I do think they do a great job. It probably would be almost impossible to have it exactly right all of the time. But no, I couldn't complain about it. I think Metairn do quite a good job.
I mean, I travelled to work this morning, and the temperature went from 2 to minus 5 to plus 1 to minus 6 all in one route. I mean, how? And that's over half an hour, so how could you ever really properly account for all of that?
That's correct, yeah.
Paddy Rooney, what do you think? I think the noisiest voices, if you dig into it, are those with support in business or in business, because I think they see the impact on the cash register as soon as any colour of a warning is issued, and I have great sympathy for them. But what is your view? Are Metairn getting it right, or have we had the boy that cries wolf so often now in the summer with a bit of windy rain that people are distrusting?
You don't need to get the temperature gauge checked in your car or anything for accuracy, by the way, do you? No?
I don't know.
That seems like a very loud swing to me in a short space of time. But anyway.
It's up and down. It's about altitude, oh, Paddy.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the by and by. One of the things that I like about the weather warnings that Metairn give is the shock effect to get people's attention. It's very, very difficult to get people's attention now. And because, I mean, how many days in the year do we have these? 20 at the max? We've had a few there before Christmas where we had a lot of events in town that were cancelled and turned out to be very stormy over a two-day period or whatever. It's not as if it takes place about 4 or 5 months of the year. We have about 20 days, I would say, max, when you aggregate them all together. And it is a public safety issue because if I was able to lift my camera now and show you, my garden is completely white here and all the area that we live, because Mary and I live in a by road. So there's no gritting or anything like that. So the ice is impacted on the road. And the only people that should be out on the road is people who need to be out on the road. So I think from my sister lives in Clonmel and Tipperary, and they're getting it a lot worse than we are now, right? And their snow is a lot heavier and their frost is a lot more severe than we have. And their roads are a lot quieter for that. Of course, people don't need to get a warning from Metairn. All they have to do is look out the window and see how stormy it is. But from a public safety point of view, and I think a business continuity point of view, and also, of course, I'm not here to speak on behalf of insurance companies and stuff like that, but if there are a lot of claims because people that are out and about doing what they're doing and they're disregarding the weather, then the claims go up and then the premiums go up. And of course, we don't want that. So for the level of inconvenience and how brief it is throughout the year,
we do see kind of a lot of yellow weather warnings. I mean, what is a yellow low temperature warning when the temperature is like plus one to minus two or three? I mean, we survived for generations without that level of guidance and being scared into things.
We did, but as I said, that's the way to get people's. Sometimes you have to do that to get people's attention, and you know, you can't really compare how we live in Ireland in 2025 as we did in 1925.
What, you mean to tell me I can't walk to school in 2 foot of snow in my bare feet? Is that what you're saying? In 2025?
No, not going that far.
Because that's what an awful lot of people on social media have done. No,
well, I can use that argument if you want me to.
No.
I'm saying there are a lot more people on the road driving faster cars than there were in 1925. And, you know, there's a lot more of us now, and we're going around faster, doing more things. And there's for about 20 days of the year, we need to calm down, just let the thing settle, and it'll be all right by Sunday.
All right, and it'll all be done and dusted, like the top of Ergol, by Monday. What do you think, Thomas Pringle?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the warning system is necessary, and it seems to me, I was just thinking about this over the last couple of days, like, I mean, the storms are worse now than they were when we were... even when I was a kid, and that there too, maybe the dissemination of information is a lot faster now as well too. But it seems to me that the amount of houses that were without electricity after the last weekend and stuff like that there was a lot more severe than anything I remember years ago. You would have had local stuff and that there, so I think that's important. The one thing that gets me about the warnings is you could have a yellow wind warning and an orange frost warning and stuff like that there, and there's a confusion and the amount of warnings and stuff like that, but I think it is very necessary and overall. And, you know, and it's also, I think they're also giving warnings over counties, and, you know, what happens when you're at the county border? Is it grand and the green
side? It's a blunt enough instrument,
you know, and that's the kind of, but that's kind of flippant and that as well too. Like, you know, but overall, I think we need them, and I think people need to be aware of what the.
I'd love to see the county councils. I know they're. I mean, I think the Met Éireann is a line of the Department of Housing, isn't it? And that department, so it is funded. I think we might get more nuanced sort of travel information from the likes of a county council that has access to the road. They all do, but would have more interest in road temperatures, elevation, you know, proximity to the sea and what have you. It'd be really interesting to see what kind of a more nuanced forecast the council, for instance, could give, or an arm of the council. But Emer, it's quite interesting because I made the point about businesses being disadvantaged, and yet farming is one of the biggest industries in the country, and I'm sure many in the farming community are hanging on sort of the words of Met Éireann just to determine what to do with their livestock, whether the feeding troughs or the water troughs will be full of water and all that type of stuff. So we have to think of what we probably don't do enough nowadays is how different things affect different people.
Oh, well, that's it. It's just different elements for different people. And that's what I say. It's very important that they get these weather warnings so they can prepare. But like, if you look at any social media at the minute, the farmers are the ones that are out helping people all this week, especially further down the country where things are very bad, you know, with tractors, with clearing roads, with getting just their jeeps, their vehicles are bigger, getting things for older people in their communities. So, like, we're here this morning, and I have to make a call. We're supposed to have a mart this evening, so I'll have to check the yard now at 11 o'clock. And, like, I don't know if it's going to thaw today, but that'll all have to be done the next hour or two. So,
beholden to the weather, yeah.
Yeah, and at the same time, men need to sell their stock, so, it's a difficult one.
Greg, I see the media. Sorry, go ahead, Paddy.
Greg, before you move
on. No, go ahead.
In relation to power, and there's many thousands of homes across the country that have no power and had no power for a prolonged period of time. And apparently there's two reasons why they have no power, because the lines are damaged either by very, very strong wind, there's very little you can do anything about it. And the other one is about falling trees that are knocking lines down. So if we have storm by 20 days of the year, for the other 345 days of the year, whatever it is, should it not be a good idea for the ESB to make sure that all power lines, either along the road or wherever they're going, that there is no trees near them if they fall down? Isn't out of storm period, that they should be making sure that there's no trees around.
Oh, it's the biggest threat to the infrastructure, yeah.
The lines are continuously knocked down by trees.
But, I mean, I presume there is already an onus on landowners to ensure that their trees aren't encroaching on power lines the same way as they shouldn't be hanging out onto the roads. But there was a big standoff about hedge cutting in this county over winter, so I don't know how we're going to sort that out. Eimear, if you comment on that.
I was just saying there's so many elements now in the farming and for your schemes and everything you're involved in that you're not allowed to touch trees or hedge growth or anything like that. So, yeah, everything has become very complicated.
Yeah, it's getting worse, isn't it?
DSB do go around cutting branches and trees away from power lines and that there already, yeah. Greg. I've seen them do it regularly. Now, whether they do it often enough, I don't know, or whether, you know, and how far do you have to go from a power line and stuff like that there? I mean, basically, you get rid of all the trees, probably, if that was the case, because the power lines are everywhere.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, that should be underground, arguably, but anyway, I don't know why you're not. We're still putting them above ground. That's a different argument altogether. Okay, back with more from our panel after these. Greg, I see the media are not happy with independents gaining from government formation when they are minority. They had no problem with the Green Party in government for 5 years at only 3 in the polls, making rules and regulations for us, the voters. Of course, the Green TDs were voted out this time. I think we should not confuse having a conversation about something with not being happy about something, because it's going to leave us literally no space to talk at all. A caller says the winners will be the Healy Rays in this formation. They'll probably get a roof over Kerry. Hi, Greg. I don't think they'll want that. Hi, Greg. Don't forget that, unless they own it, actually, and I won't actually say what I was about to say. Hi, Greg. Don't forget that all this horse trading is being done with your and mine, the taxpayers' money, because the Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael clique will not release the reins of power as they think it's their God-given right, and no doubt the lives of our fellow citizens in these constituencies will be enhanced with capital and infrastructure projects bringing prosperity to them. On that point, because I do understand where people come from, Thomas, when they do text this kind of stuff, but I will reiterate, the only reason Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have been in power for 100 years and will go back into power now is because people in very significant numbers came at it and voted for them. And 3 years ago, there was this presumption that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael were going to be wiped out at the next general election. And I was saying, look at the maths, it's very likely they'll return to power because that's what that's what the largest proportion of those that bothered to vote actually voted for. So there's no point, I mean, of course there's a point, blaming Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and everybody else when it is a democracy. It's 100 years of what the people have voted for.
Yeah, and that's the reality of the situation. And it's a sad part of the situation, for the likes of me, that lost out in that election. But that's, the people have had their say, and that's what they voted for, what they wanted. And That's the reality of the situation. That's the way it goes. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I'll come to Eimear on that. I mean, I suppose, Eimear, you know, this is, we live in a democracy. And you have to accept that democracy.
Look, you do. And as you said, it's correct. Like, people did go out and they voted the way they did. You can't blame the parties. They have to just work with it now. The people that, you know, the politicians that have been elected have to go ahead, and for the two largest parties, and that's it. You know, everyone will have, you know, I think it's a wild shame that we don't still have Thomas, you know, representing us here in the area, and it's very sad for Killybegs. But unfortunately, I suppose maybe, I'm not going into the ins and outs of it, but we had a few independents and different things happened this election, which was unfortunate for us.
Well, Sinn Féin didn't help Thomas either, putting a popular candidate up there.
But, you know, and he's a massive miss now to our community here. So, but that's politics, and that's how people voted, and that's what they've done. You know, so we can't blame the two parties that are there now and have to work with us.
And in relation to that, yeah. Paddy, I think a lot of people, as hard as this might be for other people to hear, a lot of people all of a sudden necessarily didn't want the change that everyone would presume that everybody wanted. They said, right, things might not be perfect, but, you know, better the devil you know, and I'm using that phrase only as it is a phrase, and that's the way they voted, and that's where we're at.
Yeah, there's a bit of that. I mean, 4 out of every 10 people didn't even engage with the process in the first place. I mean, there was only, 58.5% of the people bothered to come out to vote. I mean, you could have the number of people that stayed at home would have elected two governments. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. It's very difficult for political parties to break through. I mean, we've had about seven or eight parties that have tried to do so since the formation of the state, and they all came and they've all went. If you look at the same in Britain, you have the 2.5-party system. In England, you've had UKIP and Reform and all those trying to break through, but they're finding it very, very difficult. And the same goes for Europe. I mean, I can't remember, maybe Thomas or Emer would help me out here, but I can't remember the last time that a new political party made the breakthrough, with the exception of probably in Greece after the crash or whatever.
Well, I think Reform...
Parties have a huge advantage.
I think Reform... I think Reform are on the brink of that breakthrough in Britain.
In Italy, you had Meloni in Italy, and
the AfD in Germany are going to
It's difficult to do. It's very, very difficult for a new political party.
For sure, but I would say we could argue though that the 2.5 in Ireland, the half is independents. A lot of people like to vote independent.
They do, but I suppose Thomas will be able to vouch for this. You see, there are two types of voters out there. There are people that stick with their party line, which means that parties have very solid core votes, and then there are floating votes. And new parties then don't have a core vote. They've got to take a generation or two before they can build that up. And, you know, it depends, then their fortunes waxes and wanes along the way, and sometimes they can sustain them and sometimes they can't. You
know? Paddy, I wish we had another hour. Genuinely, we have to leave it there. Thanks so much for your time. Always a pleasure. Take care of yourself. Thomas Pringle, lovely to chat to you. Best of luck going forward. We'll chat again. Eamon McGuinness, we will get you a router down there. We're going to sort something out. But it's been,
I don't know what's wrong.
It's okay. It's just technology and it's fine. But it's been great to have you on, and hopefully we'll have you in visuals and audio next time. But thanks so much for joining us today and overcoming as best we could those technical issues.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, take care of yourself. We'll be back with more in the 9 till noon show. In fact, your questions for Seamus gone after we take a break.